This week on RSBNB Update, in our final Elder God Wars front, we head to the Sentistan sewers to fight the Zekar and Zook. It's a traditional wave-based hack-and-slash combat adventure with multiple chads, safe spots, new capes, and mythical prizes for each combat style. This is RSBNB Update, episode 853, recorded Thursday, October 28th, 2021. Full frontal with Skull Zook. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to RSBNB Update for another week, another Elder God Wars front, the final front, the Zekar front, the full front. Any other myriad of names that the community has been calling this week? Tadis, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Shane.
Nice to... we're going to have a fun talk, because you surprised me today, and I was so happy when I heard what you had to say, but I'm preempting that. But, of course, he is Tannis79, also joining us this week. Zant, welcome.
Hello.
I knew you had to be on this one, because you said this is the front you were most eagerly anticipating.
Yes, and it did not disappoint.
Wonderful. And also, Thaxi, welcome back.
Hey again. Good to be
no
back.
No math this week, right?
Not planned math.
Thank you for joining us, everybody. And of course, if you want full show notes, you can find us at update.rsbnb.com. You can also join our friends chat, Bits Bytes. And we're just going to jump in to the Zekar front, Inferno, the whatever we want to call it in this stage, the full front. You know, there's been a whole myriad of names this week, hasn't there? Tannis, what do you want to call it?
I think we should call it Full Frontal.
With Samantha B. that's one of the things that I think they maybe missed on this one was, you know, we have the fight arena, the original, where you fight players. You've got the fight caves, the fight kiln, the fight cauldron. And, you know, we've already got a fight arena, so it's not really Zuck's arena. Like, the most accurate term for this is absolutely the fight sewers. But, like, maybe not.
Takes place under Sentistan.
And, you know, the Inferno is more old school thing. That's technically, like, lore-wise, maybe in the kiln. Like, so I don't know. We're not sure what to call it. I think arena is what I've settled on, but...
Yeah. Yeah. It's just absolutely hilarious. Zant, what's your sense?
I'm okay with fight sewer. It's really grody sounding, but hey, I mean, it's something.
I'm going to go with Zekar front.
Yeah, I think we could all go with that, to be honest, though.
Yeah, but like, I'm going to go and kill the Zekar front three times.
Well, I mean, for the purpose of this episode, and if you're heading into the Zekar front or the sewers or the fight arena.
I'm going to go do three... Yeah,
you're gonna go kill Zook, and we need to be clear. It's Zook, not Zuck, because there's another Zuck in the news with his android looking body and barbecue sauce bookstop that made news today. But it's
Shane.
Later, perhaps. But all right. So starting off, of course, you head down, and there's this huge, huge crater in the middle of Sentistan, right where all those oxen were that. We're carrying supplies in, and you head down into, as they say, the fiery depths of Sentistan. And when you get down there, there's, of course, a collection of Zekar. And interestingly enough, in terms of fighting these, I don't think there's any reason to fight them. There's no Slayer task associated with them. But you run in, and you get the cutscene that was previewed last week on the live stream. He says he's a chieftain. He was born into a world where all were free. Then the Empire came, of course, talking about the Zerosian Empire, conquered his people. He was thrown into the pits where he was going to die. And following from that, he had to fight. He was very successful against demons, dragons, vampires, practically everything. And in terms of getting back his freedom, he won it back from, as he says, the Great Tribune. Torva, and when he went looking for worthier foes, he found what he calls the ultimate arena, which is, of course, the Takar. And this is, in terms of where old school's Zook fight comes in is that he takes place there in the Inferno. We talked a bit about that last week, and he says they all fell the same. And with that, they call him Zakal, champion of the fire, the first outsider to defeat them all. And for his prize, he got the Elder Kill. And because of that, that's precisely why Full has called upon him to do this last front against us, the last of the four fronts of the Elder God Wars. And he says, unlike the Takhar, my mind is my own. And in terms of this, there's also a huge discussion about the actual God Wars, because he took part in the original God Wars, and it was at the end only Bandos who was actually able to take him down, believe it or not. And with that, Zook was then chained within the kiln, and as a result of this, we now fast forward to where we are today, where Full reformed the Takhar. Now, of course, we have the Zekar, and this is where our fight begins. Is there anything lore-wise you guys want to jump on before we move into the fight itself here? Because I think we have lots of fun stuff to talk about.
I think it's worth a brief note, and probably worth a longer conversation later, that it seems like somebody brought this up earlier in the week in the Clan Quest lore channel, that like none of the people that are actually fighting in these armies actually care about the eggs. It really seems like the Elder Gods picked four kind of fronts that will just destroy indiscriminately. The one most under control is Karapak, but then the Nodon he's fighting with are not. They don't care. They're, you know, mind controlled effectively at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There are, like, none of the fronts really seem interested in what's going on. That is an interesting choice, and I'm sure it was just how that happened from a, you know, development perspective, but interesting to me.
Yeah, and that might come back at some point in the future with the lore, perhaps on that. And one other note before we get into the fight itself, and the creatures down inside the sewer don't actually drop anima.
Hmm.
Which I don't know if
the creatures in the waves in the fight do.
But the creatures in the fight do, and I don't know if that's an oversight or what the plan is with that. But General Gradar is actually down here. He's, of course, the contact because of that whole Bandos discussion that we had in the cutscene. So I found that interesting seeing him here. And I mean, who would have ever thought the Bandosians would come into this without their god? But lo and behold, we have General Gradar here voicing some discussion on this. So you guys ready to jump in?
Let's go.
Yeah. All right. Do we want to talk about how our experience has been with this
yeah,
this week
let's,
before
let's,
we jump
let's,
into
let's,
the
let's,
fight itself?
Yeah, let's do that. Zan?
So, yeah, I've killed it twice so far, just in normal mode. My first attempt, I got to Zook pretty quickly, but, oh my gosh, I died probably 30, 40 times.
Yeah.
And that was essentially the same experience as my second kill, which I did last night, except for, this really irritates me, twice I got him down to, like, less than 10k HP, and the stupid boulder from the ceiling killed me because I didn't have Disruption Shield or something ready. And it was, yeah. Let's not talk about that.
All right.
We'll talk through mechanics and tips for that in a second,
then,
I think.
Moving in terms of to slightly more interesting, I suffered through a few of the first waves, made it, I think, to wave 6 or 7 on the first run. A couple runs after that, I think I hit something closer to 10 or 11. And then following from that, it was actually smooth sailing until I hit 15, picked up a shield after that. Then, for some reason, the Harkin and triple Jad waves were actually really simple, I found, but more on that after. And then, much like Zant, about 2.5 hours trying to get the first Zook kill. And I will go back at some point this weekend for Free Death Week. And that's an important thing, because unlike all the previous Takhar endeavors, this is not a safe death. So it's going to cost you if you don't do it outside Free Death Week. So let's just keep that in mind. And
which, You normally want to wear the Tuk-Kulzo ring for this fight, so it's not a ring of death, cheap death. It's a real big boy death.
Yeah. And moving to slightly more interesting, I'm going to save the most interesting for last, Thaxi.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to beat around the bush. I had the same experience as you guys did. My first kills were, I died multiple times prior to getting to Zook. And on Zook himself, I think it took me a little over an hour to like sort everything out and grab that first kill. Since then, I have done 20 kills on magic and 11 kills on range. I do prefer range, so I've been doing that since kill 20. It's been a lovely week.
All right.
Oh, and I also tried hard mode for a couple of hours. I am a low-key gamer. I should be very clear to everybody. I said this the first episode I was here. I am an experienced PVMer. I am not a good PVMer. I do not like a lot of the switches, and I have trouble managing a lot of things at once. So I do not enjoy hard mode. I will probably put a weekend into getting the combined cape at some point, but at this point, if I were to walk in there, I would not be able to walk out with one.
All right. And the most interesting? Tanis.
Yeah, so, I mean, not surprisingly, like everyone else, I've died a bunch of times, but this has been the most accessible of the four fronts, so that was good. So the problems that I had were this, you know, traditional RuneScape combat problems, which is probably about the best as I could have hoped for. What do you call him, Shane? He's not Zook. He's Zook. Zook. I haven't beat Zook yet, but what I liked about the fight, at least what I thought was the fight until reading the notes, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay. I thought it was more of my kind of style of fight, right? Where, yeah, you gotta do a little bit of surging here and there, and you have to look out for when the floor turns lava. But for the most part, it's like, you know, a bash him up, punch him in the face kind of fight. I like that.
Whenever the floor turned to lava, I was thinking of the floor is lava cap meme.
Yeah. But because of the fight being in waves, because of being able to limit just how many people were attacking me at once.
Safe spots.
Familiarity with Jad and the kiln and stuff. And then I think the biggest factor, the most important factor this time around, is everything with a very high contrast.
Because, you know, looking at it, if you look at it, the NPCs are almost black.
Mm-hmm. And the background's red, and then the fire is like this light kind of yellow. Or at least it looks like a lighter type of yellow to me.
That's so what it is.
It was just easy to tell. The only problem I had with that was, you know, it's the same thing. You run into the field of view thing, so I have to decrease my magnifier, catch where that NPC is, and try to get there as quick as I can. Usually you gotta wait, because if I don't hit the anticipate the right time, I get thrown around anyway. Yeah. But
I'm not gonna lie, I didn't think that this was going to be something accessible in terms of the accessibility side of it for you. So I'm really pleased to hear what you have to say on this.
I had a feeling. I was secretly optimistic that this one was going to be at least up to par with everything else, right? Like, if I wasn't going to be able to do it, it was going to be because of traditional means and not because they decided to put in colored particles on the core, you know, like they did with Grosses. So but I don't know, I guess these always had a special place anyway, you know. I was probably one of only a few idiots that went and got the enhanced fire cape, you know, and the kiln and all that, so I was hoping that it would work.
I did it too.
It did. So yeah, there you go, Foxy.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yay. Okay. So before we go in terms of just how you're greeted in this fight. We need to do a bit of an audio showcase. We heard some of this last week, but when you put it in with the entirety of the fight, the way this sounds is yet again the audio team at its pinnacle. So everybody have a listen to this. And this is the music track that plays through the entire fight. It's an 8-minute long track that goes on loop. And as you can see, it sets the mood wonderfully.
Shane, I get to play the game that song is from.
It's hype.
Yeah, you know, I think that one thing that we always take into account with the podcast is that everybody always assumes that when you make a video, it's going to be 50-50 in terms of what makes it and sells it, right? But in reality, it's, and this is what I found and why we're an audio first podcast, is it's closer to, you know, 75-80% audio in terms of, you know, most of the experiences you have in terms of games and podcasts and even movies for that perspective. Because, you know, there's that age-old discussion of people having, you know, 65-inch 4K TV, but running, you know, bass stereo speakers off it. That's really not fun. And that's what this boss fight is in general, is just, you know, pairing these things all so nicely together. So, once again, grade A on the audio work to the audio team on this fight. Not only the music track, but just in general, the atmosphere associated with it as well. So, perfect.
I thought it had a real Doom kind of feel to it.
Okay.
It reminded me of.
Interesting.
Mm, I can hear it.
I don't think I ever played through enough of those games to know what you're going for on that, but I'll accept it. I'll believe you.
So. Heavy drums, rock guitar.
Uh-huh.
All right. Metal. So, time to dive right in and, well, let's just make it be known here. I'll say it again. Deaths are not safe. You're going to find checkpoints on waves 6, 11, 16, and 17. And there's a chest mechanic for drops, kind of like you have in the Elite Dungeons. And in terms of gear, I'm using the Tier 90 wand with the Tier 88 ports offhand, two pieces of ports tank armor for Animate Dead usage, an Obsidian Helmet, Ganondermic Boots, Cinderbanes. I think that's generally an accessible level of gear. Tannis used Masterwork, I assume?
Yep.
All right.
Sphere of Annihilation, but I carried magic for the Jads.
Right, fair enough.
Which I wish, that was the one nice thing about the kiln, was with that obsidian, all you had to do was bring your staff and a helmet.
And yeah.
I am so using an obsidian helmet, I will say that. Zant, what did you use?
My first kill was in Pernix, and then between that and the second kill, I upgraded to Sirenic and transferred my perks over. So,
oh wow,
nice!
All right, Thaxi, same thing. Tank armor.
I did magic tank armor for my first 20 kills. I really think that's probably, if you're looking to get into this, that's a great way to learn. Is even just Ganodermic, if you can throw some perks on there, like Enhanced Devoted is good enough. Of note, I think everybody who isn't using three pieces of Crypt Bloom armor should have the Obsidian Helm on. And if you have the extra Tok Kol sitting around, because this thing just drops a ton of Tok Kol, should donate it to the coffer in the Fight Cauldron, which will increase your damage. So it effectively adds, like, it pretends you're wearing an extra piece of obsidian armor with 10% damage reduction on it. So wearing only the helm with that coffer, you can get 19% damage reduction just from the helm.
Oh, wow.
Which is huge. It's better than the difference between, like, a two-piece and three-piece Crypt Bloom buff. And it works for all styles.
Yeah, and I had no idea you could make that donation.
Yeah. It's 15,000 tokel for 20 minutes. You can stack it up to 3 times, so it's 45,000 tokel an hour. And if you take more than an hour for a kill, it obviously will run out before Zook. But the armor reduction does work through the entire kill, including Zook. And but the helms, that they do not give an accuracy boost versus Zook, but they do for the waves. And same thing for the Tukulzo ring, is that the ring will provide a boost for the waves, but not will not boost your damage against the boss. So just gear-wise, my current gear setup is standard Serenic with an obsidian helm.
Okay.
But I do advise, if you're wanting to learn magic and you have, you know, Cinderbades, Blast Fusion Boots, just throw some Ganodermic top bottom on and an obsidian helm. You're good to go.
Yeah, and I used Insight Fear and, of course, Animate Dead as well. We'll just stay with that. So, other useful items that I will be picking up eventually with this, I think Blessed Flask is better than having to run Penance on here, because that's how I've been keeping my prayer up for the entire time period. But that's just the way that I was approaching it as well. But
great place to use Emerald the Criminal Bolts. They were great for the waves.
Oh, those are fantastic for the waves.
Nice.
So much extra damage.
All right. So let's go through. I'm just going to do a bit of a quick TLDR on the waves for anybody who just wants a brief overview of what you're going to be getting into. We're going to go into each of these waves and the mechanics behind them in a little bit. But first off, waves 1 to 5 are largely melee-based. For me with these, I was able to just soul split through them. No real big deal. Then wave 5, you're going to find your first challenge wave, and you're going to be presented with a circle of 8 little guys, and you need to do 8,000 damage to each of them, or else the ones who you don't destroy are going to explode and deal typeless damage to you. Then as you progress through this, this is the point where you're going to want to start praying based on the specific styles. You're going to, for the wave 6 to 10, likely want to focus on ranged prayer, unless you're focusing down one or two at a time, in which you could switch to soul split. It's also worth noting that on wave 6, you will see your first Jad, which you just take down and you kill, as you do in the cave, in the kiln. Not too much to write home about with that. We also, of course, have 2 Jads on wave 11 and another challenge wave on 10 as well, which the one on 10 is slightly more complicated, but we'll get to that in just a moment. Then waves 11 to 15 are largely magic base, and then you're going to, of course, swap to soul split if you're only facing a few of them. And on wave 16, 3 Jads at one time. You're going to want to safe spot these. We'll have more on that in just a minute. Wave 17 is Hurricane, and wave 18, of course, is Zook. And that's a bit of a brief rundown on how the waves work for this fight. And I think with that, we can kind of just move into the more generalist focus on what we do on each of these. Sound good, everyone?
Yeah.
All right. So safe spots are a very important key in this. And one of the biggest I've found is on the southeast. But Thaxi, what else do you think about safe spots?
Yeah. My issue with the southeast spot is that you have to be very careful not to stack too many things on one side or the other of it, because if you're like you would in other spots, you can stack things in various parts of the arena. The southeast spot tends to stack everything opposite that rock.
Yeah.
Which means that when you step out from behind that rock, you take an awful lot of damage from 6 things attacking you at once.
And I think that was part of my problem on some of the mid waves, honestly.
Yeah. I have been soul splitting almost the entire thing. And it really is just kind of figuring out the best places to stand for these. I think, too, kind of like you just went through, you can generalize these by saying that the challenge waves happen every 5th, 10th, 15th wave. For the challenge wave is a DPS phase where you have to do, you know, face a specific style and then kill the things and do damage to Zook. The wave before the challenge wave and before the DPS wave, you then have a stronger single style wave, and then before that, a less strong single style wave. And so those kind of four things, and then after the challenge, you get a Jod. And so that's a set of five waves that repeats roughly three times throughout the fight. For those melee-based waves, the first kind of four waves in there, for me, the best thing, there's a set of rocks just to the east of the arena, towards the like middle east, let's say. If you stand on the east side of those, nothing on
about
wave three will attack
you. About halfway east side, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. If you stand on the east side of those mid-east rocks.
But not fully on
rocks,
the far edge of it.
Correct. Okay. Yeah, it's the middle of the – it's mid-east, right? So we're not going all the way to the east wall. If you stand right behind those rocks there, like up against them, none of the meleeers will be able to reach you from waves two or three, which means you have to deal with one or two rangers and otherwise can soul split or just not pray anything and take next to no damage on those waves, those first four waves. It's also a great place to start for that DPS check waves.
You know, I actually don't think I used that rock at all.
Right. And I didn't either for the longest time, but it does trap things in a way that you don't, like, untrap them when you move to attack them.
Yeah.
Which is very nice for those meleeers.
All right.
In that fourth wave on there, it also drops you right next to one of the igneous guys, which you can kind of stun and do a lot of damage to before the others get up to you. And it traps the third one of them on the far side of the room, so you can kind of isolate them again to be one at a time. Wave five is a challenge wave, so no need to, you stand where he puts you. For wave six and seven, I stand northeast. Quick reminder that wave six is a Jad wave. If you can kind of stand, there's a east wall on the kind of northern side of it, right? Which Zuck is to the north and the entrance is to the south of the arena. On that east-northeast side, right up against the wall is a set of rocks. You stand north of those.
It's kind of similar to the southeast one, just rotated a bit.
I will say this is the spooky... Wave 6 is the spookiest of these safe spots because it will trap a Jad onto the other side of that rock from you. But it does allow you to clear the other things in the arena. You can also stand slightly to the west of that rock, and the Jad will get stuck on those mid-east rocks that you were using previously. You can stand all the farther way to the north part of the arena. But that's where I stand for 6 and 7. Wave 8 was the hardest wave to figure out for me from a safe spot angle in terms of finding a place where I was never being attacked by more than two rangers at the same time. Wave 8 is the harder ranger wave. You'll spawn, I want to say, 6 to 8 of the Tok'Zil rangers.
And these guys have a mechanic that amps up their damage. Yeah.
Yeah. They act like a turret. The longer they stand in the same place, the more damage they do, up to about 300 or more percent additional damage. If you make them move even a single square, that will reset to zero. And their base damage is something you can very easily soul split through. So what I've found is that in the northwest side of the arena, there is a rock that is separated from the edge towards the middle, on that northwest side still. And if you stand, there's a volcano-looking part of it. If you stand on the north or west side of that, all of the rangers except for one will spawn and be safe spottable from one of those two positions. So you go back and forth pulling those, and as you move to the other side of the safe spot, they will move with you, so you never have them stacking up that damage. And you can just alternate killing one on the west and the north sides.
Yeah, and I just want to say that they did say that, you know, safe spotting has been a hallmark of these kind of fights going back to the fight cave, and that's why it's obviously designed this way.
Yeah. That makes that wave in particular a lot more straightforward to do. If you're still in trouble with it, range prayer is still an option there. I've started to soul split that one. Wave 9, 11 to 13, and 16, I do stand in that southeast corner. The magic users tend to get stuck. Their spawns a little bit better for that.
Yeah.
So you don't never have more than a couple things stacked up on the sides of that. And the southeast, it separates you enough from those big hell puppies with a really long range. So that you can kind of take out other things. And then if you go any counterclockwise rotation around the arena, always counterclockwise, you will unstick only one monster at a time to clear those out. Same thing for all of the Jad waves. If you go counterclockwise around the arena from that southeast spot, you will get the Jets isolated in a 1v1 every time, which is very convenient. And then wave 14 is the last one that's left that I haven't talked about. I usually start on the west wall and then, again, work that counterclockwise rotation. That will allow you to trap all of the mages on that like mage horde wave behind two different rocks as you do the south and the east parts of that igneous set. I start on the west wall for that one and just try to burst that mage down as fast as I can.
Okay. All right. Zant, any thoughts on safe spaces or Tanis based on just how you were doing this visually?
Yeah, honestly, I'm going to try out some of these different spots because I was just using that one in the southeast. And yeah, it's a pain when you get every enemy lured to one side of it and you have to start chipping away at them. And then, you know, people go the other side and it's just a mess. Yeah. It turns to a mess really quickly.
Yeah. Tanis, did you use any of these spots?
Probably inadvertently most of them.
Okay, fair enough. All right, we're going to run through the waves in detail now. And one thing I didn't mention in the gear recommendation TLDR is that that poison actually does work against all of the waves aside from the Zook wave. So we just need to make that clear as well. That wasn't mentioned previously, and I don't know that there's much to say for waves 1 to 5. They're relatively simple. If you use the spots, you're able to soul split through them, but if you need to, this is where you want to pray melee. For the wave 5 challenge wave, just effectively burst down each of the little guys. They all have 8,000 life points. Try and get it down to, 2... ish. I think that's what I got mine down to. Were you guys able to kill all of them?
Yes.
Okay. Zant?
Yep.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I was the only one who was not able to do that.
First time, no. Second time, yes.
Tank armor makes it much more challenging. Okay. If you are on manual and you can drop a damage boosting ultimate when you go to attack Zook there, it becomes a lot easier to just drop a single threshold onto each of them and mow them down that way.
And it's also worth noting that after wave 5, you do get the opportunity, or at the start of wave 5, you do get the opportunity to hit Zook for 50,000 damage. And if you don't get him down to that 50,000 damage cap, you will need to redo the previous wave to enable the button to fight him. That's something we didn't mention on each of the three times you actually fight Zook before the main Zook fight.
Which that part sucks.
We can throw in here too, because we meant to mention it, is the monsters from this fight are actually fairly profitable, especially the igneous monsters that give elite monster loot. So there are a lot of people who have been farming triple job, which is terrifying, or farming this wave 4, because if you press that button and don't do damage to Zook, he will just reset the wave for you. And so you can infinitely do wave 4, which is just a lot of killing monsters for a lot of money.
Yeah. And to be clear, in terms of what was effectively amounting to 1.5 runs in terms of the number of waves done, I didn't get to Zook the second time I did it, but my chest was 14 mil.
It's not too shabby.
And I didn't even kill the boss.
My first kill was over 20 mil.
Yeah.
In the chest.
Whoa. You can make 10 to 20 mil an hour fairly consistently off of these, and a lot of that will come off of killing the waves.
Yeah.
Not which is something bad. 10 to 20 mil an hour.
Which is something in looking through this entire week, and I mentioned this to you last night, Taxi, is that everybody is focused on Zook and the getting to the end and the capes, but we cannot underscore that this is an entire experience in itself where the waves, as you work up to them, are also so, so very important, not only from the combat side, but just from the loot that you're going to be getting.
When you have the experience, the waves are just as challenging, if not more so, than the Zook fight itself. Getting there is challenging.
True,
on its own.
True.
They did a good job with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we were at five, moving on to six. Six is, of course, where you find your first jab, and with that, you'll want to take him on, of course, on your own, do the regular prayer switching that you've become accustomed to in the fight cave and fight kiln. If you haven't done that before, you can see his forward 2 feet slam down to the ground. When he does that, that will be a ranged attack, and the other attack, when he goes a little bit backwards and there's an orange projectile flying through the sky, that is his magic attack, and stay out of melee distance to take the Jads down. Anything else on six before we move on to the 6 through 10?
Just watch out for the big melee boys. They hit big numbers. If you're prayer flicking on Jod, make sure you're not standing next to them.
Yeah, that can result in a bad day. Other prayers you might want to be focusing on 6 to 10 include ranged. And, you know, if you're safe spotting, use soul split, take on a few at a time. Waves 11 to 15 can be seen as a magic phase, so magic is probably best if you're unless you're facing a few at a time. And we need to also talk about some of the other little mechanics that pop up through these waves. On wave 4, you meet Igneous Zekar, and these ones have very high defense to the point you won't be able to damage them unless you stun them. And that, of course, also factors into why people were farming wave 4 all the time, is because it's one of those waves that you can reset, but it's also where you first learn of this mechanic where you need to stun. Also, on wave 9, you meet your second batch of special monsters. Let's just call them Igneous monsters. These ones require a threshold to weaken. It can be any threshold ability. Then you have a certain amount of time to take them down. It's important to remember these, and you'll see why when we get to the Zook fight. Then, the second challenge wave at wave 10, you get a single unbreakable Zekar Ket that will attack with melee, and it's only damaged by dealing attacks that deal more than 3,000 damage. It also has a shield. Its shield also deactivates while stunned, allowing for the use of a single ability after that. And I see you put this note in here, Thax. Asphyxiate works well here?
Asphyxiate will stun and will... Asphyxiate and Destroy will both allow you to bypass the shield. I don't know if the first hit will go through, but the subsequent hits from those abilities will damage. As well as, again, like those stunning abilities, you do a stun followed by Wild Magic or Rapid Fire to do pretty massive damage to this guy.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. I didn't pick that up.
I found that out today.
In my runs, and that's going to be a huge impact. And like you said, I think we're all learning things from this, and hopefully the listeners are as well. So after wave 10, there will be a wave with two Jads. As you can see, we're working up to one, to two, and eventually three. Start with one, and you safe spot the other one. And regular, of course, Jad mechanics will apply for this one using the safe spots that we mentioned.
Both multi-Jads previously. Start in the southeast. Okay. Multi-Jads start in the southeast.
So you want to stand in the southeast corner then for this one as well, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. And then, as I mentioned, the rest of the waves, 10 through 15, are largely going to be magic-based, so pray accordingly, or if you're safe-spotting, use Soul Split. Then, on wave 14, we meet our third batch of Igneous creatures, this time mages, and for me, these are the ones that took me forever to figure out. I was wondering, what the hell, how do you take their disruption or their shield down? And all you have to do is go stand within melee distance of them, and the shield will come down. That's a really simple mechanic.
Yeah, we all did that.
Yeah.
We all were like, why? Why no damage?
And I was fortunate enough that I was still doing enough damage that I was bringing them down the first couple of runs, but it just took a long time.
My first run, I thought you had to stun all the Igneous stuff, because Asphyxiate and the greater stun abilities worked on those Rangers too, and I got to these mages and like,
right.
What is wrong here?
Right. All right, wave 15, final challenge wave. You get what's called three fatal Zekar Yitrkot. That's almost sounded Russian there. And if you don't pray appropriately or you mitigate each of them, they can do up to 8,000 damage to you. The objective here is only going to be survival. The blue one is magic. The green blob is ranged. Black will be typeless. They attack four times. And what I did to do this and it actually resulted in me going up, pick up a shield switch for this, which is one of the first times I actually used shield switches in combat was to just use the barricade ability.
Yep.
What would be the alternative if you didn't want to use a shield barricade here?
You kind of have to use a shield, or about a third of the time you can get lucky. The challenge here is that you need to not take any damage over one, basically. Which is to say you have to pray correctly against the things, and then when the typeless hit comes in, you have to either resonance or use the disruption shield ability or barricade. You don't really have other options, and the typeless one usually hits twice in most instances. So barricade is the easiest option for this, because you're able to build while you're attacking Zuck, build adrenaline to use it. Zuck, excuse me.
Whatever, it's fine.
but yeah, you can, I have a couple of times gone with disruption shield followed by resonance followed by protect proper timed.
But that's really
switching.
Kludgy thinking about it.
It's like, usually at that point my brain is like, oh hey, in like 10 seconds from now there will be three Jads standing right where I am currently standing. Which is to note, and moving on to Wave 16, not to steal your thunder, Shane, but three Jads, get to the southeast corner immediately. Like, be ready, like running out of that arena, trap circular
Surge.
Arena, as fast, yeah. Like immediately.
I just
want
to say
thing
one thing
down.
Before we go on to 16 with this. One problem I had was the way I had things set up in terms of Revolution firing off ultimates is that I had a couple points where in the fight with Zook before the challenge that my ultimate would have went off.
Mm.
So I didn't have enough for the barricade.
Yeah, I mean, there's learning point is being able to pull your ultimates out and manually knowing when to manually activate yep. your ultimates will be a big help here in terms of managing adrenaline.
Yeah.
Even just having an adrenaline potion to like, oh, hey, I have 70% adrenaline and I need 100% right
That's
now.
That's what I did on subsequent runs.
Pop that potion. Yeah. It's a big up.
Yeah. Okay.
Note too, if you have that shield switch, you can resonance the first hit regardless of what it is, and attack the Eat Hercot. You can't do damage to them, but you can build adrenaline off of attacking them. And so if you're at 80%,
okay.
you can build to 100 before okay. and
good to know. Good to know. And I guess with that, we'll move on to 16, which is the three Jad wave. As you said, surge to the southeast corner. And if you're lucky, it should be set up in such a way that it is safe spotted.
I haven't been unlucky yet. 31 runs, it's very consistent. That southeast yeah. corner is the place to be for this. And then, again, counterclockwise around. You can also not surge and just tank three Jads at once, which there's a checkpoint right before it, so if you want to just have some fun and try it, you can. Just know that if you stun any of the Jads, they will sink and you will die. So,
Oops.
First Jads in the game that aren't stun immune. Let's go!
Yeah, and there was a question on the live stream from Dennis and ClanQuest that said, you know, why not just remove all the safe spaces at wave 16? And I think it was Ryan on the stream who said, yeah, you know, in hindsight, we probably should have done that, but I don't think we'll change that now.
I think if they did that, you would be far more likely to die on the Jads than you would be on the Zook fight. I think that makes it incredibly challenging, especially given server lag and latency.
Yep.
Like
yep.
the people in Australia just look at that and be like, ha, guess we're not coming back here again. It adds a lot of layers of challenge to our game that are not necessarily present in old school. Because of our issues with server, it effectively make, if you did that on wave 2 or on world 2, server lag would cause stutter in the attacks of the bosses, and they would be synced. This would be unable to be completed on world 2 or on a very highly populated world if there was not terrain.
Yeah, and
so
see, that's,
I support it being.
And that's, you know, one of the huge issues with the combat system in general is that you rely on this tick system, you rely on the combat itself and the communication with the server and that 0.6 second tick rate, that if anything goes wrong, you're really in trouble with that. And, you know, that's something for me, that is still one of the huge stumbling points in terms of RS combat that I'd like to see fixed in some way, but I don't know what the best way of going about that would be. But that's a topic for another show. Then at wave 17, you have Hurricane, which is the same mechanics as in the fight kill, in a relatively easy fight. Deal damage before it submerges, focus on the tentacles. Otherwise, an Hurricane will also have a shield that increases based on the number of tentacles present in the arena. Now, when did you find that one out?
Again, 31 rounds of killing Hurricane. I got the pet yesterday. Very happy about it. If you attack him right at the beginning when he has no tentacle spawn, he has no shield. If you attack him at the halfway point in the second or third round when he has 12 tentacle spawn, he has like a 600 or 700 damage shield. That's the point of killing the tentacles. I mean, and as more tentacles spawn while you're killing the face in that first round, the shield will go up.
Yeah.
I do not know an exact math conversion. My suspicion is on hard mode, there's an actual, like, the magic tentacles equal shield. In normal mode, I believe it's just 2 tentacles per 100 damage shield. But I'm, you know,
that's
more tentacles, more shield.
That's not too bad. No. I mean, you can work through that.
It's not 3,000.
No.
But it's something to chew through. It does a lot of work, especially on range where you're hitting a lot of times for small numbers.
All right, congratulations. Wave 18, you're at Zook. Tanis, Zant, anything before we move on to the Zook fight out of this quick run through here?
Mm-mm.
Nope.
All right. Well, the Zook fight, this is where you're going to learn a lot, because there's 4 main mechanics and 1 game-ending mechanic, and the 4 main mechanics can be evaded relatively easily if you know what to look for. And in normal mode, there's auto attacks split out between each of them. I think it's 3 in effect on that.
It is 4.
4,
I can
okay.
confirm it is 4.
All right, fair enough. And the first one you're going to find, the first special attack you're going to find, is called Geothermal Burn, and this is where Zook says you will break beneath me, which is interesting. Also, interestingly enough, something that Karapak says. Pick that up. This applies 1 stack of a magic bleed on you, and you need to clear this with freedom. On its own, it's not going to be too much of a problem, but it's something that you should deal with. The next mechanic is called Sear, in which he'll yell Sear or Suffer, and he will give you 1 melee hit, and this also applies a debuff that lowers your maximum life points. And initially what I was doing with this is I was spam clicking super restore potions after this, but it turns out that all you need to do when he does that attack is click on Zook, surge, click on him again, and surge back, and that will clear the debuff, and then you can just sip 1 dose of your super restore potion. And it's 15 tiles that you need to move, and each surge is 10, so that covers you. Now, of course, if you go out of his melee distance, he will start maging you, which is something that you don't want to happen, because you're going to be wanting to effectively pray melee for the entire Zook fight, except in certain cases where you're dealing with the little guys, as they'll just call them. The next attack... Go ahead.
Oh, he has a wide enough melee range. I believe it's 3 tiles away from his actual model. That if you surge from within his melee range, you will not get more than 2 tiles outside of his melee range on the far end of it. And so he will never mage you. So if you just surge and then wait a couple ticks, fire off another basic ability, even surge, hit a basic keybind, and then surge again, your basic ability will face you back towards him. And that it's a very, you can very quickly take care of that.
All right, good. The next attack is called Quake. And with this one, this is perhaps the attack that messed me up the most, and this can be known either by counting or Zook yelling tremble before me or fall before my might, or the earth yields to me. And this is an AoE that will deal typeless damage and will apply stacks of geothermal burn. And if you don't clear that, then you're going to be hitting huge or be hit by huge amounts of magic damage. And this is what took me out numerous times. And as I figured out, the best thing to do with this is, again, to surge to the other side of Zook.
Yeah, a single surge will take care of this in about 90% of situations. If you surge and then run about 3 tiles farther, you are guaranteed to take a magic attack. and you will guaranteed to be outside the range of this. So that's what I've been doing, is just run across quick magic for that one attack, magic prayer, and then sweat back. Otherwise, just see if a little crack forms underneath you. If there is, then you just move away again. But usually a surge will take care of that.
All right. And the final non-game ending attack is called Empowered Magic, where a projectile will fly in from the sky. You can barricade, resonance, use other defensives. And if you don't like to shield swap like I do, you could do something like debilitate or shield dome as well.
If you are using melee or range, or if you are have a lot of room pouches lying around, you can use the disruption shield ability to spell to negate this. It won't cost you any abilities. It won't cost you any time. You don't have to do any switches for it. You can just keybind that, or you can keybind spellbook swap if you're on ancients, and then that it just requires like 6 or 7 different types of runes. You can spellbook swap and disruption shield in the same tick as the attack lands on you, and as long as you hit your keybinds in the correct order, you will disruption shield will absorb something that hits in the same tick.
I guess that's
so. Even
kind
if
of,
you're a little bit behind on this, disruption shield is the fastest way to mitigate.
That's kind of like doing
things ahead of time.
A bladed dive surge at Krosis, then. In terms of stacking them together in the same tick.
Yes, again, that's an issue if you're on magic and you're on ancients, where you need to
get
click
over
those two
the
things. If you're on any other combat style, you just hit your disruption shield keybind when he says loud words after using quake, and ta-da, you don't take damage.
Yeah. Now, before we get to the game-ending attack, I just want to go to Tanis, and we talked a lot about specific mechanics here. Did you just effectively do it on the fly and run defensively, or did you look up any guides on these mechanics of Zook when you were fighting him?
I looked up a lot of the guides, but I quickly thought this is a little bit out of my realm. And so, like I said, the fire, the floor, it's lava, was easy enough to kind of to get out of the way. But I haven't beat Zook because I was pretty much just smashing back and forth.
All right.
I hadn't beat him yet, but that was okay. I mean, I wasn't,
Yeah, it was still enjoyable.
If you play with your audio on, you freedom the first time he yells at you. You surge twice the second time he yells at you. You surge once the third time he yells at you. And you hit your disruption shield the fourth time he yells at you. The fifth time you use freedom and the floor becomes hot.
That's actually a really interesting way of thinking about it.
I mean, that's how you deal with the entire fight.
So that's a fantastic TLDR.
And then when you get to the end of it, Tanis, you could effectively do a video on that saying, hey, I killed Zook blind.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the fight.
I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but yeah.
Zant, any thoughts before we move on to the floor is lava or igneous rain?
No, don't think so.
All right, good. Okay, igneous rain. Timing is so important for this one. If you don't anticipate or freedom when he yells at you next, you'll be stunned for about 2 seconds or so. And this is critical time that you need to begin to move where the challenge NPC will spawn. Effectively, what happens with this is that you're dragged to a spot of Zook's choosing. So with this, you have to run about 135 degrees from your current position clockwise. So that means if you're dragged to, say, the 6 o'clock position in the arena facing north, you want to run to about the 10 o'clock position to take on the first igneous challenger. And there, the first one is going to be the igneous Zekar Hur, as you had in previous waves, that needs to be stunned in order to take it down. And these ones you got to take down as quick as you can, because after this you have two other ones following from this. The second one is the ranger. This one needs the threshold to weaken it. And the third is the mage with the disruption shield, where you need to stand in melee distance. And all three of these need to be killed before Zook's adrenaline bar reaches full. Otherwise, game over. This happens about 20 seconds after the last mage appears or so, and can be timed by looking at that adrenaline bar. And after the Zekar is killed, the extra action button will appear. You click that, and the sequence starts again from geothermal burn. And round we go until you get down to 100,000 life points, where the mechanic rotation will reset to geothermal burn no matter where you were at, and the fight will continue down to zero. On the kill I got, I had a pretty scary moment where the last one was at about 7,000, and I had to redo that entire three challenger phase. So if I messed up the clicking or I didn't get there on time, yeah, that would have been bad, getting him down to about 7,000 and not being successful.
This mechanic, I can see tripping up a lot of people because there's a lot going on at once.
And just before you go into this, I want to say what the two biggest problems I had with this were. One, it was inadvertently clicking on Zook himself. And secondly, the little information boxes that appear above your character were in some ways obscuring what I needed to click on. But
yeah, you can click through them. So the start of the week, I was doing, I think, what a lot of people were doing, which is surging between each of these corners. So he effectively divides the arena into eight equally sized parts, northeast, southwest, northwest,
the pizza
southwest,
slices.
Pizza slices. And every one of these will spawn three pizza slices farther around. So you will do slightly more than one full revolution of the arena in getting between these. There you can surge between each of these. If you are on melee, it's obviously you have to be concerned about, like, well, you have in melee you have bladed dive and barge, which makes life maybe a little easier because you can target where you want to go. On magic and ranged, you have range, and I think people aren't really taking advantage of that for this. Things that I discovered today: Zook's click box does not extend to the floor. He will always turn to face you at the start of each of these pizza slices. So every time he spawns something, he will face you, not the thing he's spawning. So you can always click the ground between his feet to walk directly underneath him. If you do that, if you walk directly underneath him when the pizza slices disappear, and then you click the next monster, you will always run out and be just far enough outside of Zook to be away from the fire.
That's a really easy way of doing it.
Yeah, and you will. Yeah, so you have much less. You only have to run about four squares from that point to get back underneath Zook to go to the next corner.
So you don't even need a surge then.
And if you're standing underneath Zook when the mage spawns, if the mage spawns north, east, south, or west, you can surge, and the mage is blocked. It is a hard stop tile. You cannot surge through it. So you can, from standing underneath Zook, you can target the mage and surge. And if you are lined up properly, not for the diagonals, only for the cardinal directions, you will surge directly up to the mage. That is the only time I've been using surge in this part of the fight, is I have been clicking underneath Zook for every one of these, realigning my camera to be facing him at all times, clicking underneath him and going. And that has been giving me way more time to kill things. I've been having way more time. Like, I'm
That's a lot of time if you mitigate the stun as well.
The place where I lost the... So I did 21 kills, or 31 kills. 21 of them I got Igneous Stones on. The 10 that I didn't, I want to say more than half, were lost because I did not stun the first one of these things and then did not have enough time to avoid the insta-kill. That was my problem, is I just had too much going on and forgot to stun. And then they just had too much health for me to deal with. Using this, where I don't have to spend as much time running and lining up surges and everything, and like... I wrong surge so often for this. It was ridiculous. Not having to deal with that and just not surging at all and not even moving very far saved me a lot of those kills. I can usually kill two or three of the monsters in a single corner if it comes down to that. So, strong opinion, do not be surging for this if you're not on melee. If you're on melee, you have a barge button, please use it.
All right. Another thing with this, would the sticky bomb work for the stun?
I have not tried. They are kind of expensive.
Yeah.
It might. Which is actually a good point because range only has two stuns.
Yeah.
Versus magic and melee that have three. And I have run into that as a problem on a couple of times. I've thought about it. I haven't actually tried.
All right. Well, that's something to pick up after the fact. But and if you do this successfully, you don't use any checkpoints. You get your Igneous Stone. but you still get the kill count otherwise. You still get all the loot otherwise. And, you know, we're going to talk about this capes right now, but just wrapping up the fight segment.
I'm going to retcon what I just said.
Okay.
The sticky bomb is a bind, not a stun. It would not work.
Okay. Got it. Interesting. Well, we have to check that out. Did you guys have fun, even though you were dying a lot, Tannis, Zant?
Yeah, absolutely.
This was the first one that I wasn't dying because they put something screwy in there that I couldn't see. So, in that regard, I was happy. It's happy to die by my own stupidity and ineptness. Yay!
All right. And same for you, Zant?
Yeah, killing him the first time, I did the whole thing basically without a guide at all. I just wanted to go at it without really any resources, except I did have to ask in my clan chat, how do you deal with the Igneous Mages? Yeah. I just couldn't figure that one out. But getting that first kill was so satisfying. It felt like I accomplished something. And I just really enjoyed it. It was pretty enjoyable for all the waves in the fight at the end as well.
Yeah, that's the vibes it gave me. It gave me old fight cave vibes prior to EOC and whatnot. So, and Paxi, I know you died a few times, but I assume you had fun in your dabbling and your attempt on hard mode.
I had incredible trouble actually getting my flawless run because I almost never use magic, and I was wearing Animate Dead with tank armor, and so my damage was not enough to clear the wave 5 damage check.
Right, and we need to be clear, flawless is not just using no checkpoints, it's also beating all three of the DPS checks.
Yeah, all three of the challenges, right? Taking no damage from that wave 15. And I remember getting my first shot. I remember shaking. I could barely feel my hands. I was sweating. My heart was probably going 180. I had a very similar experience on the last 100,000 life points of Zerk for that flawless run. I was like, I've done this 12 or 13 times, whatever it was at this point. I'm like, this is it. This is the one. I got the damage checks. We're going. And I was so nervous about it. That feeling was really there. And I such good warm fuzzies.
And you know what the mode I put myself into to find success on this is that back in the day, I played lots of StarCraft, and StarCraft is a very micro intensive game. So what I did is I just made this fight about the micro, moving little movements here and there, focusing on the lower third of the screen, the action bars and where things are heading, and not necessarily outside of the movement, just focusing on that and the debuff bar, the buff bar and whatnot, making it work that way. And that's how I found success on this. And it was it was very StarCraft-like in the end, I will say. And I never thought I'd say that about RuneScape Combat, but lo and behold, there we are. So,
welcome to mid-tier PVMing, Shane. We're glad to have you.
I actually have an Informer article planned on just that topic. That'll probably be November's discussion.
I do very similar things in terms of watching my buff bar and making sure that I'm canceling things on the correct seconds and timing. What you have to do. That's what you're learning.
I know we've touched on a bit, but you also play League sometimes, and I don't know how good you are in that.
No.
No? Okay.
I'm middle of the road. I'm a low silver ranked human.
Okay, fair enough. And it's that same kind of MOBA thing that does factor into it. Tannisant, anything before we move on to the capes and the other rewards?
Nope.
Not that I can think of.
All right. Well, we definitely had a fun time. And what everybody has been after, of course, is the capes. And, you know, I think everybody was anticipating we'd have something for this, but I think the magic cape definitely punched above its weight this week. So what are your thoughts on this, Thaxi?
Very literally, in that the magic cape was bugged to deal somewhere between 50 and 100% additional damage over what the tooltip said for the first 2 days of release. Oops. Thanks for fixing that, Sponge. We appreciate you.
Well, some people got an early bird bonus.
Oh, yeah. That wave 10 guy that doesn't take damage below 3k, his single Omni Power would just kill him. It was a lot of fun for a day. Yes, capes. Let's talk about capes. The magic cape Omnipower is still incredibly powerful. It gives you 4 chances to critically strike, which the way that magic is working right now, you have the crit stick, which, God bless the 9 billion coin crit stick.
It Fractured does Staff great of things. Armadale.
Yeah, crit stick. That's the one. It's but also because Incite Fear exists, and is you get that 40% adrenaline cost Tsunami. Tsunami gives you adrenaline every time you crit. Tsunami is always worth using because you will, if you're going to continue to attack things, you will make up way more adrenaline than you use on the ability afterwards. And so having these extra 4 chances to crit from a single ability, really powerful. It's up there kind of in terms of greater concentrated blast. You're hitting 3 times an ability. Really awesome. Mage Cape, big win. Mage also doesn't have a lot of things that use adrenaline, right? Your 25 or 30% adrenaline for Guthic Staff is like the best dump they have for adrenaline. They don't have a ton of extra ultimates to use or things. So that this being usable, Omnipower, is amazing for them. Mage got a big, big win with that cape. The Range Cape is the loser of the 3. I'm sad to say. It's still going to be used. It's great to have an extra ability. Range does not have a ton of like abilities to use. The Range Cape, if you have time for the bleed to run its full distance on Deadshot, is slightly better than using a Dark Bow special, which this costs 60%. Dark Bow costs 65%. If you have the time, this is slightly better. It will be used. That's great. If you people that don't own Essences of Finality but do own this cape, they now have access to that big damage, which is great. Ability to like dump that adrenaline. The melee cape, it's a great buff. It's an ability that should be used. It's hard to work out where it belongs in a melee rotation. They have 2 skills worth of abilities, and so they're already kind of chuffed with like tons of options to spam adrenaline into, especially with all their additional special attacks and things on their weapons. Melee is doing pretty okay. Cape's a good buff. It's fine. But magic is the big winner here. For the
and it's
sword.
Green. Or no, purple. And,
yes.
Sorry, I messed that up. I was going to jump up and down because it was green.
Range Cape's green. That's exciting. How they look, mixed opinions.
Oh,
I
like the way they look.
Let's take a second and talk about that.
I like the way they look. Tennis? Is that?
I mean, you don't really... I don't know. You're going to have an override anyway, I feel.
I really
you know?
Like have, the way these capes look.
You have
I
history.
Love the purple one. Love it.
You have history and expectations here.
Yeah.
Fire Cape was so cool. Why was Fire Cape so cool in 2006, 2008?
Moved.
It was the one thing that moved. It was animated.
Yeah.
And then the Kiln Capes came out, and they looked awful, and then they got reworked. And then the reworked version of them, they have particles off the bottom, and they've got 2 moving textures on them. We went from 1 moving texture to 2 moving textures. Ooh. Rare for a lot of things, right? There's very few items that have those. And then we get these capes, and they have no particles and no textures that move.
Well, I poked like, the okay. bear. I poked the bear. Let's talk about the mythical sword.
I have one thing to say about okay. the capes. I really do wish that the hybrid cape could be recolored to the green and purple of the mage and range capes.
Yeah,
I just good. Feel like that's kind of missing.
Yeah, that'd know? Be good. Well, use an override.
But I want my pretty purple cape.
Yeah, that purple's actually pretty nice, I will say that.
It's a very nice shade. Like yeah. almost
it's a good it's yeah. a good royal, like that's a nice deep color. I'm a fan yeah. too. But again, I wish it moved. Like if they had the flowing, like real flowing lava look to it, if they'd managed to pull that off, oh they'd be I'd everywhere. They'd be
do you guys think maybe they'll kind of rework them a
no.
bit at some point?
No.
Maybe just add particles or something like they did the kiln capes?
No, these are already very
unlikely.
High detailed. Anyways,
yeah.
mythical sword.
I don't think we're getting Rhino Cape treatment on these.
Unfortunate.
Yeah. So the next thing is the sword. The sword is so expensive it practically doesn't exist.
It's a bit of a myth.
Even like the difference here is that hard mode for the first 2 bosses in the Elder God Wars, if you had 3 people, like you could do Archglacier low percent in rage, anybody could do it. So people could get cores from that. For Karapak, like you get 3 people, you have lower drop chance each, but tons of kills were being done of hard mode. For this, I think much, much fewer kills are being done of the hard mode for this, because it is much more challenging. And so I think the sword will be much more rare over time. I think the sword will stay very expensive. At the start of this week, it was 15 bill. Currently, last I saw, it was 10 bill. I do not expect it to drop a terribly large amount. That said, it is working as expected. It's really big damages. It may replace the Zaros God Sword in a lot of situations. It's great. It does a lot of damage. It's a nice hefty buff for melee, but it's also so expensive it practically doesn't exist. So like, yeah, it's whatever. It's good. If you have it and you have all your melee stuff, you can do damage that I think is on par with, you know, magic damage, as long as you're the only melee or yada yada. Whatever. So next thing, the book from this front. It matches with the Elder God Wars theme of the other two combat books. It is better than a Scrimshaw and worse than a Grimoire. Unless it becomes bugged. Of the three God books, I'm willing to say that it is the strongest damage output in general PVM scenarios. Just from the math perspective, and marginally, but it does have the drawback of 10% increased damage taken to you when it activates. It also is one of those things that you can't time the activation necessarily, so like... I have been using the Jess book a lot this week.
You might
I
have a problem if you, get this book. If you were to pair it with, say, a Berserk or something, right?
I mean, the thing is, you're doing a ton more damage, so if you're doing 6 or 7 times the damage of your target, which is honestly usual for RuneScape, our targets have millions of health points and we have 10,000. You know, Soulsplit will heal back a ton of the extra damage you take. So there's an argument for this on either way. I think it is the strongest damage-wise of the books, and it is especially strong for the range combat style, especially with greater ricochet, because you're hitting things so often, the book will activate more often. I don't have a whole lot else to say on that. It's stronger, you have the extra drawback. Any of the God books are useful. I just looked today, the Jas book is 15 mil. If you're looking to pick up a book, just get that one. Don't spend 400 mil on this. It's not worth the difference. Whatever. Next up, the Quiver. The Quiver is a similarly mythically rare item. The estimates I've seen are Quiver pieces anywhere from 1 in 20 to 1 in 30-ish. Could be anything outside of that. Who knows? But Quivers are pretty rare. Quiver pieces are pretty rare. You need 100 of them. You get 8 troves an hour with a fully upgraded ring. If you math that out, it is like 250, 300, 400 hours of Elder God Wars, which does not include the Arc Glacier, because the hard mode of the Arc Glacier does not drop troves, for reasons, to create a single Quiver. Quiver is quality of life only, the damage buff on it. It increases your maximum damage only, not your minimum, or at least if it increases minimum, it doesn't say that it does. Which means that it is a less than 1% net damage increase. It is a quality of life update only, and it is going to be used primarily by people who are using bow and crossbow switching to use the new, in my opinion, the Despair arrows, right, with Hydrix bolts. Right. That's like where this quiver gets used. It's a nice quality of life for anybody, but it's so expensive, nobody else is, it's not worth buying. So that's the quiver. Lastly, Magma Tempest. Magma Tempest is the biggest winner of this update. It is, at time of speaking, about max cash to buy. It synergizes very well with our Fractured Staff of Armadil, the crit stick, because it can crit on every target within its range, and each of those crits will apply an auto attack from the Staff of Armadil special attack.
It's being reworked next week to be more like a regular ability.
That makes so much more sense.
Or in currently one of the following weeks.
Currently it is very broken.
Yeah.
It's like in line with Fractured Staff of Armadil on release, where it's just, I crit on everything, I auto on everything, everything dies.
Yep. And it's a basic.
So, and it's a basic ability, and it's not targeted, and it you can, yeah. It's really strong. It's really strong, and it's doing great things for magic, and it's very expensive right now. It probably does deserve an update. That's it. That's the rewards for this one.
All right.
Also just throw in, there's a ton of common drops on this table, which I have been mentioning for a while. I want, like, they threw a bunch of items, so all the items on the table should depreciate slightly less because they can give fewer numbers but still give you good amounts of rewards by just throwing like 40 different things at you.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate, given that we're killing a lot of different types of monsters.
Other things include the Hydrix Bolts, Irrits, Cadentine, and Quorm. Of all things.
Combat potions. They're throwing overload ingredients at the PVMers. They're saying, PVMers, you're using these supplies. Here, we're giving them back to you.
Also, Wine of Ceridoman, Wine of Zamorak, Onyx, Onyx Bolt Tips, some more Auric Alchem salvage items, Alchemist Keys, which open a chest in Centistan, which on their own, have their own drop table. One of the said troll items, rare troll items you can actually get from that is another alchemist key. That's very rare.
Apparently, there still is another item that hasn't been discovered.
No, they found them all. They found them all on the stream. The very rares are Onyx Dust and Wine of Ceridomen. 15.
I have earned over 3,000 Onyx Dust, I think, from this. I was trying to keep 30 Onyx in the bank, and I now have no Onyx in the bank and only Onyx Dust. I think I'm at like 3,200. You get a lot of Onyx Dust from these.
So you're going to sell your keys, or you're going to...
I've been selling them.
Okay.
I've been selling them. I'm not personally willing to take the time to open them. Yeah. Other people can make money off of that.
More potion ingredients, Cadentine, Irrit, Hairlander, Impious, Infernal Ashes for your incense sticks, Quorum, Marintil seeds? What?
Okay. I have not been getting those. I wonder if my herbicide's eating them.
Maybe.
My seedicide's eating
maybe.
Them.
Snake hides, unicorn dust, raw rat meat, mud runes. Hydrix Bolt Tips, Cave Nightshade, a very good one, and Accursed Ashes, amongst other things for that. Just while we're going on the other drop table, stuff that we were talking about, there's, of course, the question of the Igneous Stone. When you get extra Igneous Stones, they said they'd be good for disassembly. They give one special material, and it's a 1 in 29 chance of the whole list of special materials. So that's your Armadyl, your Bandos, your Brassican, Explosive, Rumbling.
All components classed as rare are on that drop table.
So, I mean, there's definitely a reason to keep doing this after the fact.
Yeah, and for right now, it's we should talk about the anima from this, the ring upgrade. It does very little in the actual fight itself, but it allows you to get those quiver pieces. And they allow you now to upgrade your ring with 5,000 of each anima, right? And so everybody is looking to get a ton of all of the animas. And what we're kind of realizing is that it seems there may be a bug from this front and the last front,
where
once you have obtained all of your tradable anima, your untradable comes much slower.
Yep. That's going to be adjusted,
which is unfortunate.
Yeah,
but for
right
now,
not next week, but
the
week after, probably.
Anima from this is selling very well. It's dropping somewhat, but it's still like 200 mil to upgrade that ring right now. So,
and for what it's worth, you need 5,000 of each anima to overcharge it from Wahizatel in the Sentistan Cathedral to allow all the passive effects to happen.
Yeah, makes all the ring effects passive, which is super nice. I wonder if that impacts the skilling buffs. I wonder if that, or if that just means the front effects.
I think it's just the front effects.
That would make way more sense to me.
Yeah. Other fixes that are on the way, the Magma Tempest one we mentioned, Hurricane farming fix is coming on Monday. Apparently people were farming that a little too much. I don't know what they're going to do about that.
The pet for Hurricane has a 1 in 200 drop rate with a threshold of 40.
Okay.
So you can kill, it's right after triple jabs. So you just do triple jabs and Hurricane repeatedly. You can kill like 6 or 7 or 8 of them an hour. You get the pet in like 3 hours.
Right. Okay, fair
on
enough.
On average. Yeah.
Jad kills were also not counting for final boss kill count in this fight.
Yeah.
So overall, I think the sense is that this is perhaps one of the smoothest front releases.
The bug list on this one is real short. We don't have any crazy clickbox problems. We don't have any like missing voice lines or lore. All the drops are showing up where they should. The titles are showing up where they should. This is the first time we've had the boss actually have a preset in the bank on release.
Yes.
Yeah, thankfully. I mean, there's nothing that's breaking it other than, like we said, that very first day there was a little issue with familiars. They got patched almost immediately. Everything seems to be working as intended. And some things need some rebalancing, but everything's working, which is awesome. Great job to them. And really, again, shout out to Mod Sponge for being super interactive with the community on like what everything was going to be and be like, and being open with us about what changes they're going to be making and things that are potentially bugged. I've seen him in like 2 or 3 different Discords and Twitter and just everywhere, just letting us know things that are changing and updating and fixing. his QA roots are showing, and he's doing a really great job. He's been on, I think, the last three fronts for at least partially for the rewards and stuff, and he's bringing the knowledge from one to the next, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for it. So big shout, big
once
shout
it,
out.
Once
big,
upon big. A time, and it still is in Timbo we trust, but we can slowly but surely modify that to in Timbo and Sponge we trust. Final thoughts on the front, Tanis.
Pleasantly surprised. It's definitely the best front of Elder God Wars, in my opinion. Yeah, very happy to just have the regular old problems again.
Alrighty, Zant.
Yeah, I was really hyped for this front, and it definitely did not disappoint. It's a great fight, and it kind of calls back to the original fight caves. Also, I just wanted to kind of highlight again real quick, I really do appreciate the alchemist chest. I think that's just a neat little addition that gives a new use to that little, like, another building in Sandistan. Just kind of feels like it's giving the area just another little niche thing to go do. So I really appreciate that personally. I know it's small, but thought I'd mention that.
I would not be opposed to them swapping all of the crystal key drops at Arklaesor and Krosis to be alchemist key drops and just have the entire dungeon drop alchemist keys.
Yeah, they did say that there's going to be more lore about what exactly the alchemist chest is, and the fact you get an alchemist chest or key from the alchemist chest kind of is related to that lore. So I don't know what that could be, but definitely something.
I was hoping there was some tie-in with Full Metal Alchemist or something, but
it might be. That would be unsurprising to me. Sponge threw something like that in there.
Oh, I'd eat that up.
All right. I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters, because without them, this podcast would not be possible. So this week, big thank you goes out to Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, L.O. Matey, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Ren Hawk, Ricky A., Samuel F. L., Seth W., Scott D.S., Singer, Stobeev, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. And in case anybody is wondering what this is about, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNP. You gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits for as little as $1 a month. That includes our most recent one on what happens after the full front. We're about to be surprised or shocked if we were right or not, I'd imagine, in the next month or so. So give that one a listen. But more importantly, patrons have also chosen the next monthly bit, and that will be a look at revitalizing PvP and Tanis. I don't even know what to expect from this one.
Well, I can say about that
because, I mean, I don't think you and I have ever had a good RuneScape PvP experience.
I mean, not a real one. I mean, we had the God Event 2.
Yeah.
And that was as close to good PvP as we've ever gotten.
You can kind of tell where we're going to be pulling our threads from
PvP. there are games out there that have figured this out, but
not since Evolution of Combat.
RuneScape hasn't been one of them, yeah.
Nope.
The minigames were fun in the olden days.
But yeah. Of course, we also have the VIP tier. For $3 a month, you gain access to high-quality stereo versions of the show, which you'll want for our audio showcase this week, thanks to the audio team. And for $5 a month, you get a shout-out each and every week on the show and access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, which is approaching quickly, and we are about $15-$20 away from the Patreon postcard, which is already under development. I happen to have the person working on that here, Zant. A bit of a small teaser. Don't tell them what it's gonna be, though. Just tell them how excited you are.
I am legendarily excited.
Okay,
fair enough. That's even a word.
Yeah, make it a word. That's fine for me.
Yeah.
And, of course, following from that, should we ever reach 500 a month, will be the Hot Ones Challenge. Whole range of spicy wings and whatnot that Tanis, myself, and others will hopefully subject ourselves to. So if this sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. All right. So we have, of course, in addition to the front, the gods discussing what was happening, and they are hitting the roof with this and that. You know, we are at the end of the rope on this, and there's nowhere left to turn. In a hurried state, Zamorak says, "Where are the runners? We need more bodies on the front. If I wait much longer, somebody's going to get strung up as an example. Now." Armadil's like, "What are you doing? The amount of anathema they're being exposed to, they'll die. We'll maintain your army then. If I can't appeal to your morality, how about your common sense?" Then he says, "All of my necromancers must endure a week-long submersion in the Shadow Realm. Those who emerge with their bodies and minds largely intact are permitted to enter my service. Rest assured that my people are more equipped for work of this nature." So he tortures them before they can serve. And Sarah Doman calls him a monster and a rabid dog. And here is where we see the battle lines being drawn for after Elder God War. Sarah Doman says, "When this is over, I will end your miserable life and the world will be better for it." So there we have it. You can kind of see where the various forces are going to come about to friction after the Elder God Wars. And Zamorak says that he has saved our precious people, and Sarah Doman lacked the backbone to do so. Saren says, "Don't congratulate yourself, Zamorak. The Zekar are adapting to your tactics." Armadil says, "Yes, we are fortunate that the Bandosians are here, keeping Zalzuk's minions on the back foot. I must admit that their arrival was a surprise to me," Saren says. "Zerador was unable to unite the disparate Bandosian faction, so I had dismissed the possibilities. It seems this Gradar has managed to rally some to his cause. He may be one to watch." Zamorak says, "As I hear it, Gradar is presently nursing an army of colorful bruises, winging to anybody who will listen. If there's one thing to be said for the undead, it's their merciful lack of complaining." And Saren says, "Well, we find ourselves in an unexpected good fortune. The costs have been grave. Do not think of me unaware of that, Sarah Doman. But we stand a chance where once we stood none." I like Battlefield General Zamorak.
Me too. I mean, I liked him for a while.
Yeah.
He was my World Event 1 guy.
Okay.
I mean,
it feels like we're at a cliffhanger here, honestly.
Yeah, we got a sense they were getting desperate, and now it seems like they're still on edge, like no one would believe, which makes sense given the number of things attacking them, but they're feeling maybe like a little bit more of a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The question is, though, with this, you know, what's going to be the thing that's going to, in effect, you know, break the camel's back? Because we have the Zekar front, and there's got to be something within the next few weeks that's going to, in effect, move this forward. And I'm assuming the God dialogue is just going to continue on. And if it doesn't, that's going to be a little bit awkward as we just, you know, move into a phase where we're kind of coasting on this last batch of dialogue and the end of the Zekar front. But we'll have to wait and see till come Sunday on that, whether the dialogue continues
or not. I mean, and I know we do try to generally avoid speculation, but I think I can fairly confidently say, you know what's coming next.
Eggs are gonna
hatch. It is time for a quest.
Yeah, or a mini quest at least.
Yeah, I think within a month or so we'll have a quest, and hopefully the dialogue will just go on until we have a lot of dialogue and quest things that will move us into the next step of whatever is happening.
And I want everyone's opinion on this. You remember when they said that this was going to be released as four fronts and people thought, oh my god, batched content, but lo and behold, here we are after the four fronts, and I think it's gone pretty well.
Well, now, we're not used to this being batched content.
Can you imagine if all of these had come out at once?
No.
No.
Can you imagine the amount of rewards, two, just the chaos that would have caused. They give us 4 high quality bosses with high quality rewards over 4 months. I don't even know if you call it bad.
These God Wars front episodes have been some of the biggest that we've ever done production wise, and I couldn't imagine them being any bigger. I think these are rivaling, you know, new skill launches. Well, how do you feel about that, Tanis?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. My only hope, and I guess it's also a concern, I hope that the dialogue and just the general pacing that we're in for this continues, because I would hate to see the pacing get thrown off at this point.
We had a couple of years, the last couple of years, and given COVID, where, you know, they slowed down their content remarkably. We had, after like 120 Herbler and Farming, we did not have, you know, we had occasional updates, but it was like once every few months. We had Wars
Retreat, then it was Archaeology after that.
Yeah. We had like large updates every few months, and like Archaeology was humongous. Yeah, right? Like, Archaeology is the size of all these fronts combined and more.
But, you know, in large part, that's due to changes in strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Changes in the way they were doing updates from, of course, the week to week to big archaeology types and a mishmash of each to the Mod Warden, you know, monthly headliners and whatnot. So it was just a question of, you know, turning the ship around and swiveling the guns in the right direction, so to speak. So,
but after a couple months of off time and break, right, the summer and late spring, they gave us 4 big hitting updates 4 months in a row. And if they can keep up that pace of doing like even like 6 or ish more like big updates like these a year, that's awesome. That's like a step up from where we were, you know, recently.
Yeah, and that's what we talked about, Mod Warden helping things grow up. Because, you know, you look at what we had this year. We had, and we'll just be quick with this, we had the anniversary in January. February was as an Andra's quest and the Valentine's Day quest. March was supposed to be the Rex Matriarchs, but that was the login lockout that pushed us all the way into April. 6 weeks delay on that, the Rex Matriarchs. May was Battle at the Monolith. Then in June was City of Sentist. And then in July, we're into the Elder God Wars fronts.
Yeah.
So
if we can keep, you know, a big quest next month, that's 4 quests and what is it, 7 mini quests this year? Like, they've done a good job.
We're also owed the final chapter of the anniversary quest, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let's move on to some patch notes this week, because those still exist. New notifications have been added on mobile for the Giant Oyster, God Statues, Troll Invasion, Herbie Werby, Tears of Guthics, and Premier Club Gold Vault Reset. These can be toggled from the Settings, Notifications, and Notification Channels menu.
I'm a big fan of these.
Yeah, they're really
good.
This
is fantastic.
I
want to see more stuff like this for mobile as well. Just little things that they can do to make use of the notification system. I can't think off the top of my head of other things that could benefit from that, but I think there definitely would be some.
Yeah. Also, the additional Nodon engineer in the node in front has been removed. Okay, I don't exactly know who or what
I
that
was. I guess there
was
a second
allowed.
One. Engineer is the big guy. He's the larger melee guy that roams around the whole place that drops slightly better rewards.
Okay.
Apparently there were 2 of them for a while.
All right, fair enough. Players can no longer die while standing in Death's office.
Yeah. This is a big one for PVMers, because if this happened to you, if you got unlucky, you got hit twice by a boss mechanic while they were separated out, that was timed damage, you could previously die in Death's office, and that would double grave you, which means you lose everything that Death was holding. And there was nothing you could do about it.
Rip.
Which is incredibly frustrating. The only thing you could do about it is to message player support, and, you know, they're busy, so it can take a while
take
to get
time and
your
you don't
PVM
know
gear
response.
Back. Right. And that usually your count rollbacks or whatever, you get gear back, it doesn't have your perks on it anymore. So this is a great change. This is the, like, I want to say future-proofing, but this is like, if something were to go wrong with a future update that caused people to die in Death's office, like has happened 3 or 4 times in the past with updates, especially with Instaco mechanics, because the Instaco would hit this tick after you died and this. This is a fix. This is the, like, this cannot happen anymore. We have annoyed player support enough. So I like this change a lot.
Next up, fixed an issue with the Shadow Pontifex ring, and exact words here. Passively working in when, well, it is stored in a bank. I didn't know we went inside when yet.
Which, the crazy thing was they
obviously they mean the Archglacier fight.
Yeah, but it was passive until the Archglacier, and then apparently it was passive for the Archglacier. They just removed it being a passive for Carapac.
Necrosis.
Oops. I mean, yes, they removed it, but like the when was the one that they said, "Oh, it doesn't work if you're not wearing it," and it actually.
And I don't think we talked about the passive effect in the Zekar front, and it really doesn't matter that much.
It
lowers the damage of the lava geysers by 25%.
It's nice. I tend to ignore them. I'll just stand in them. If they're in the safe spot I want to be using, I will take an extra 2,000 damage. I'll eat one extra fish in order to not take a bunch of damage from the monsters on the other side of the rock. So this is like, yeah, you take a little bit extra damage when you're standing in the bad safe spot they're trying to get you to move out of. Okay.
All right. Next one, and this is one for Tanis. The Krosis front mushrooms that are safe to climb will no longer change location. They do change at the start of a fight, but they no longer change within the same boss kill.
Yay!
So, that's nice.
So I guess that means the only thing left that's a real bother for you at Krosis is the particles at the end and the colored smoke.
Yeah, the particles suck just because it means I don't get very much in the way of loot, if any. You know, like very little.
Yeah, because that lowers your points by the end of it. So, you know, small steps, we'll take it. And, you know, this actually spurred, I was discussing this with Sirion on Monday about this, and we spent a good deal of time going back and forth on this, and that, you know, was this a patch that was a good design initially? Or was it the fact that they, in effect, that it was bugged when it came out, but it needed to be this way for an accessibility angle? Effectively, what does that say about the whole design of the Krosis fight? And when it comes down to it at the end of the day, things like this, the mushrooms, whether or not they're safe to climb over, should be something that is taken into account both in terms of the playtests that are done from a QA and internal perspective, but also from the accessibility perspective. And you know, even for us, the three of us here who can see the boss, we will say that having the mushrooms move was an annoyance, especially when they could move while you were walking over them and cause problems for you in terms of losing the produce that you were carrying. So the lesson on this is that when you're designing something like this, when you're designing one of these boss fights, this is something that really should be considered from the very beginning, and it shouldn't necessarily take flipping to having them move and then hearing an outcry of players and swapping them back to how they were. This is something that should have probably been picked up internally beforehand, either, you know, through a QA accessibility lens or just the general sentiment of the playthroughs that were done internally on this. And I mean, if you were to put a number on it, Tanis, by how much of a factor would this improve your experience at Krosis?
Well, this is how it was when I did go and do it, and it was doable, right? Like, all I had to do was memorize where it was, and I could do it. But when they switched it, I went back like one time, and it was impossible. So I just, that was it. So, I mean, it wasn't doable. So this makes it doable again.
Yeah, we've been doing a bit of Krosis this week, and my sense is that it changes per fight and not, it's not constant for the instance like it initially was. So this seems to be a compromise down the middle. I don't know, Xanthax, if you guys noticed this at all when we were doing some yesterday.
I meant to look at it today and I forgot to.
All right. I've done so little Krosis that makes no difference to me so far.
All right, fair enough. All right. Also, balancing adjustments have been made to the mining notes in the Croesus encounter. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't exactly know whether this
is a good
thing or
a bad thing.
I
don't know that mining was the one that needed a balance change. Looking at fishing and, I mean, woodcutting without the fire
the torch.
But,
yeah.
But sure, mining, great, cool, fine.
Yeah. You know, Hunter is the one that's off the charts. I did a bit of fishing there recently, and I still think fishing is faster than wood cutting, even with the torch, but okay. It would be helpful to know whether this was an up or down change with this. So we'll leave it at that.
I think it's down. When I was doing mining with us today, I was slower, but hard to say.
All right. Fair enough. And there's our patch notes for the week, everyone. We do also need to mention the Grim Harvest and new marketplace items. I'll start with the new marketplace ones because those are the simplest. You can find these in the marketplace in-game. The Tithe Collector robes, a new set of cosmetics. And, you know, as with any cosmetic that comes out in this day and age, looks wonderful. Very in with the season. I don't know if this one's recolorable or not. That would be a factor as to whether or not I pick it up. But I do have to say I like the way it looks.
Yeah, I was wondering if it's recolorable too.
So I will find out.
Okay, you do.
I
that.
Do really like the reflectivity on the middle part of it, though. It looks really nice.
Yeah. Now, while you're sorting that out, I'm just gonna break the ice on this one. We also got the Prime Gaming Halloween jack-o'-lantern pet, but from the 28th as running down until November 1st, you'll get seasonal oddments, hodmints as they're calling them. And one of the rewards that has not been in game for more than 5 years is back, and that's the Walk Like a Zombie collection and the Zombie Walk Override. And this was a rare item that was worth, I think it was, what, $1 prior to this week? And it
close
just
to bill.
Crashed a lot with this. And I mean, it's a cosmetic. No cosmetic should ever be that much, especially a treasure hunter one. So it's good they did this.
Merchers.
I can also see that this could be a good experiment, again, in terms of monetization. As in, put a bunch of cosmetics out, put a bunch of fun things out that people want to purchase that are time limited, put a certain type of oddments out and see how many keys are sold.
One in 20,000 for a party hat. Let's go.
Ooh.
No. Terrible idea.
Please don't even say that.
party hats are like how many hundreds of bills? So like maybe, but like, and again, all because of merchers and collectors. But
yeah. Tan, is she buying any keys this weekend?
Probably not. No.
All right.
I mean, I have the zombie walk and all that, so
it looks so derpy. You just run around with your arms flapping behind you,
and it makes sound.
I like it. Mm-hmm. Oh, I forgot about that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Tithe Collector robes are not recolorable.
Okay.
Damn.
According to the wiki, I didn't actually go and like buy them or anything, but wiki's usually right.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Zan. You guys buying keys this weekend for this?
Buying keys? What?
No, although I do like a lot of the Hodman store does include a ton of past cosmetics, not just the zombie walk. It's a bunch of the old ghostly outfit sets that do work as the actual outfits for like the fishing outfit and stuff if you own them. If you own the outfits, the ghostly versions do work. Give you that XP boost. But also some of the vampire hunter stuff and some of the random old weapons and the zombie overrides. A couple of fun titles. I think I will probably spend just some like trickster titles and those kind of things that are like neat. Maybe get used on some Halloween in the future. That's the stuff that I'm probably most likely to use out of this. The Ringmaster set has pants that don't have gold trim at the top that are black that like outfit wise are very nice to have. So there's a couple of things like if I get enough just for my daily keys.
Ghostly chicken.
I think there's a couple
outfit.
Of things that like ghostly chicken outfit too. Yeah. If that's your vibe. There's a couple of things that are like Yeah. If I really wanted something, I might spend like $6 on keys for this. I'm not planning to. I have so many outfits, so many things already stored.
All right.
Yeah.
And I want to say the best part about this is that they're not, yes, there are things on Treasure Hunter for this, but they're also in the Oddman store. This has to be a blueprint going forward for doing limited items like this.
Well, and they're unique oddments too. They're yeah. only from this promotion, which is like you must buy keys within this. It's only like a 3-day period that it's running. It's not very long. It's like a Thursday to a Monday. So they're definitely like buy keys now, which is interesting because all of the Treasure Hunter items are very cheap right now. You can buy Silverhawk feathers for less than 1,000 coins. You can buy springs for less than 200, notepaper for less than 100.
Good time to upgrade that spring cleaner.
Yeah. I did. I started buying them yesterday. I finished upgrading.
Same.
yeah. So people have been buying keys for this for sure. The Zombie Walk is less than 100 mil, but still more expensive than I'm willing to pay for being derpy. But oh, I like it. It's a good. Yeah. It's a good setup. Just got to be careful with what they bring back. But yeah, I like it. Yeah, all of those old Treasure Hunter uniques, the Assassin packs, the you know, what are the all things that were cards. Good options for this.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. You know, we're not going to tell you when or where you should buy your keys, but this is, you know, a good way of doing it this time. And I just realized how cheap the Tithe Collector outfit is. It's only 135 rune coins if you're a member, yeah. 150 if you're not a member. So that's a good value on that.
It's it doesn't have any overrides or teleports or
no, it's just an outfit.
It's just the outfit, but it looks good.
Yeah. There's also a jack-o'-lantern pumpkin bed as well.
I mean, also good to note that they're doing this right before DXP. Like, they're hitting all of the good buttons for, like, short-term old content return. Like, they right before a DXP, so people want to stock up on XP. And the promotion gives you guaranteed 2x and 3x and 4x loot as one of the options for, like, multiple pumpkins. So you get, like, double or triple value out of anything you buy for this. Like, it is a great promotion if you wanted to buy keys.
In addition, we're not saying you should, but it's just out there economically.
Yes. Again, I'm not planning to do this, but if for people that do, this is a good time to do it. Jagex is making a lot of money off it. I am a fan of Jagex getting money. Just throwing that out there into the world makes the game that I enjoy playing better, even if I don't want to give them the money.
Alrighty, well, let's start wrapping up then. Let's move on to our picks of the week. And like I mentioned, I could have mentioned Meta and, you know, the real Zuck with the barbecue sauce book stop and whatnot. looking more and more Android as time goes on, Facebook rebranding itself to a different company that's going to have Facebook, Instagram, and everything under it. There you go. I snuck it in stealthily. But Tanis, go ahead. Pick of the week.
I'm going with a little $10 game I picked up last week called Aquarium Designer. And if you've ever seen the show Tanked on Animal Planet, there actually is a campaign in this game where people will order a aquarium with certain requirements that they want you to build it to. And there's not a lot to it, but it's $10 and it's a lot of fun. And it's got the most Zen elevator music there is. And I love using
water noises.
I think so. And what I like to do is, I do that Steam link and we'll turn it on the big TV in the house. It's like having an aquarium there. And I don't have to feed them.
Okay.
I don't have to maintain it. Nothing.
Doesn't
wonderful.
Smell.
Doesn't smell. No. So, yep, that's my pick of the week.
Amazing. And I was wondering, you know, if everything was okay when I first started seeing you play this, because it was a bit of a unique title.
Yeah, well, but it's so zen. Like, I mean, you know how, like, just watching an aquarium is very calming, and making it, it's kind of the same way. I mean, it's so fun to design. Yes, but there is a, I mean, there's like a casual play mode, and there's a more of a simulation mode, you know.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right, that's linked in the show notes at update.rspmb.com on Steam. Thaxi, pick of the week.
Yeah, so my pick of the week is a game that is not out for a while. It's actually a trailer for a game that's like, hey, this is coming eventually. It's called Haunted Chocolatier. I am a huge, this is not a tangent, I promise, Stardew Valley fan. And I have sunk many hundreds of hours into that game. I really love just like chill vibes and like that 8-bit and the like... just hanging out like that Harvest Moon style game where it's like there's nothing dangerous. You just get to go and just chill for forever. That's amazing to me. And the maker of Stardew Valley is in the process of creating another game. He released a trailer for it last week, which is why this is relevant now. You can find it at hauntedchocolatier.net or on Concerned Apes YouTube. And it looks like Stardew Valley 2.0. Except you're running a chocolate factory and store out of an abandoned mansion. And you same thing with like going to harvest supplies and, you know, getting to know the townspeople and all that stuff. And I'm very excited about it. It just gave me all the warm fuzzies and the music is in there for it. And oh, I can't wait. We have no idea when it's coming. It probably won't be for a while, but I'm excited.
Well, it's perfect time to announce something like that around Halloween. I've never actually played Stardew Valley myself, but I've been told I would like it. So
yeah, it's very much like it's a RuneScape players kind of a game where it's just like, I don't want to like do anything dangerous or wild. I just want to click and chill and just hang out. The combat's a little bit jank, but aside from that, it's just very relaxed.
Be careful, though. It is very easy to dump a whole day into it. Yeah. Very easy.
I'm just going to play one more in-game game. Just one more.
Just one more.
Sounds like you're speaking from experience, Zant.
Oh, yes. My partner and I have played this game a ton together. We played Stardew a lot, and we're both really excited for Hot and Chocolatier as well. So I'm definitely plus-oneing Thaxi's pick for this week. It's great.
Amazing.
All right. What's yours, Zant?
Okay, so my pick of the week is a little app called Seek. It's essentially a wildlife and nature kind of identification app. So previously, I used something called PlantSnap. It was a little paid app that you could just hold your camera up to with your phone, and it would give you a couple like potential options for what the plant is in front of you could be. Though it was kind of frustrating because it didn't seem to get it right much of the time, and... I had issues even getting it to detect certain plants, and also you have to buy the app. It's not free, and there's a plethora of other apps that do the same thing on the App Store. But most of them come with some kind of subscription or something, but Seek, by iNaturalist, and also California Academy of Sciences and National Geographic, this is a completely free app. It doesn't even have in-app purchases. And so far from all the other apps I've used, similarly to this, this one just works the best. It's fantastic. So all you really do with it, like I said, the same thing with PlantSnap is you just hold your phone up to a plant, and it can even do animals and wildlife and fungi and insects and stuff of that nature. And it'll just give you a little indication that it's detected something, and you can snap the photo, and then it'll tell you what it is. And you can save the photos you take, and it has a little gallery in the app where you can see all the photos you've taken, where you took the photo, so you can get a little map of all these plants you find. And it's also got some social elements to it. I haven't delved too far into that yet, but...
So it's like real life...
It's just great.
It's real life Pokemon Snap, then.
Yeah, kind of. I was mostly interested in it from the perspective of plants alone, but I kind of just discovered... from the process that does other things too. And I love it. Every time I go on my little walks, I always find something new and it's really exciting.
All right.
Does this giant five pointed leaf belong to a thimbleberry bush or a devil's club? Now you can know.
Yep. It's fantastic.
I wonder if you could stump it with anything.
That comparison I just made is one of those that's easy to make in the Pacific Northwest, where the two gigantic five pointed leaves.
All you really need to know is this poison ivy I'm about to wipe my butt with? Right? I mean, that's what it's really used for.
Is the vine hairy or not? That's your goal.
And also, it's quite impressive because if you find a, like you said, if you find a random leaf on the ground, that works. And same with like pine cones and pine needles and just little things of that nature, like flower petals. It can work with basically anything. It's really good at recognizing it.
That's something so small. Who would have known?
Yeah. So definitely check it out if you're like just learning more about what's around you outside.
Alrighty, sounds good. We're going to move on to our achievements now this week. We have Avocado Owned with 200 million defense XP on the 27th. Nordic Falcon got 99 runecrafting also on the 27th. The Outdoors got 99 fishing. And the Lion got 200 million in attack, strength, and defense on the 27th. Well done.
On the 26th, Donna got 99 divination. Free Milk got 99 constitution. Tanakit got 99 constitution, and Xenon Ray got 120 ranged.
Well, all right, done. On the 24th, Free Milk got 99 defense, Fritzkrieg, 99 thieving, Tanakit got 99 archaeology, and the Lion got 200 mil constitution XP. Great job.
Nice. And then on the 22nd, we have Rax Debo with 120 farming. And then we have The Outdoors with 99 thieving. And then moving on to the 21st, we have Dr. Reggie with 99 slayer. And Drizzen with 120 attack on the 21st.
Nice achievements, everyone. Next week, we'll get the... not next week, the week after. 2 weeks after that, we'll get the double XP surge. We got to strap in for that.
Yeah.
So, with that, what have we been up to on RS? Let's start with you, Zant.
So, other than doing my two Zook kills, I also did a little bit of ED2 this week randomly. Just had a friend that wanted to do it with me, so I did a couple solos after that. Nothing really profitable came from that. But actually, what I spent most of my time doing this week was I made a couple of gear upgrades. I went from Pernix to Sirenic and transferred all my perks over. So I had to level my Pernix body up to 15, which was kind of annoying. To get my biting four off of it, because you know I'm not wasting that. Sorry, I'm not wasting a biting four. But also with that, I was able to get two really good perks that perk combinations that I didn't have before, and ones that are albeit kind of annoying to get. So I now have Impatient four, and I can't remember what the other one on that is off the top of my head. But I didn't have Impatient.
What does Impatient do?
Four. It increases the amount of adrenaline you get from basics, I believe.
Oh.
Correct. It gives you 3% extra adrenaline. It's one of the core four armor perks that people use. Is anticipation, crackling, biting, and enhanced devoted.
Yeah, so impatient four, I got it with devoted four. That's what it was.
Oh, impatient, yep.
And yep. Additionally, I also got relentless five, crackling four, which was quite annoying to go for, but... Albeit, it's really good to have these. I was contemplating doing some stuff and upgrading my weapon perks, but nah, I didn't mess with that yet.
Alrighty. Tanis?
So last week I was able to... Finally, I done enough wood cutting to get the second offhand, so I've been doing a little bit of
holy!
Mining.
Hey. How much did that cost? Along.
It was 160.
That's not bad.
It sounds right.
Yeah, it was a lot cheaper than than at first. So I've been mixing that up. Probably will do a bunch of mining on double XP. So that's kind of why I wanted to have that ready. Other than that, trying to do the full frontal thing. And, that was about it for my week.
All right, Axie. I mean, I don't think I need to ask, but go for it.
I have been honing my mutant ninja skills in the sewers under Centistan. I will emerge to kill Shredder and eat a lot of pizza.
Nice.
Also, I got the Hurricane pet.
Well done.
I've been doing a lot of the fight sewers.
Okay. as for me, my few runs down to try and kill Zook, but aside from that, some Elder woodcutting And I went back to the Halloween event, got the new Loba pet. And I don't think I'm going to do much more of that Halloween event before it disappears. I don't think I'm going to go for the Legacy Cosmetics. None of them really speak to me. So, but that's what I've been up to. And yeah, woodcutting elders as well. It's been a really interesting week on that, just speaking from the money side of things. At one point, the arrows were north of 8K each. Then they were down to about 5.5 or 6, and last I sold the batch, they were down to about 3. So they've been fluctuating a lot.
I bought 10,000 arrow tips for about 1,500 to 1,800 gold each earlier this week for the splintering arrow tips for the woodcutting ones. They have lost their people are not using them. People are still sleeping on those arrows.
And that's part of the discussion we saw this week, is that the general sentiment now, if you have Fractured Staff of Armadale and the new cape, is that mage is ahead. But like you said, people are still sleeping on the arrows.
I am of the opinion that if you include the sword and you are properly utilizing the new arrow switches, which nobody has been believing me about yet, but I think it's going to be one of those, every PVM group is going to be like, ah, it's a bunch of mages because that's what they're comfortable with from however many years of the magic meta. But I think they're going to all be like, in the last magic meta, it was Rainbow. Rainbow was the person using Hydrix Bolts and like doing all of this crazy damage.
Aren't they the
damage.
One who got the world first on hard this week, or is that someone else?
That is Elisa. Elisa was another one of those people who was using range to its fullest. So there were two or three people that were like, every high two PVMer knows, like one or two people are like, oh yeah, this person bring range everywhere, but also they do enough damage to keep up with us somehow. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just like makes you like think like, okay, you're considering this is the best style, but I think if used properly with these arrows and twitches and everything, I think we're pretty even right now.
And you can see
people
where we're
sleeping on the arrows.
And you can see where we're headed with the combat discussion later this year, hopefully. But nonetheless, that's a topic for a different show. Thank you, everybody, for being here. If you want full show notes, you can find those at update.rsbnb.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on any number of listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon for your favorite Amazon A or E devices, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and of course YouTube, making that YouTube push towards 1,000 subscribers. We're about 15 or so away right there, so do leave a like and subscribe on YouTube. It helps the channel out in terms of discoverability with the nibbles and such. But we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. We'll see you then, everybody. Thank you, Maxi. Thank you, Zant. And, of course, thank you, Tanis, all of you for being here. See you then, everyone. Take care.
Hey.
See ya.